Hey, everybody. If you want the full uncensored episode, be sure to click the link below to join the Fight Club on Patreon. And don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Anyway, Keith, thank you for joining the Raw Knuckles podcast with Tim and I. Awesome stuff. Nice funny, the other day, my better half, Jamie, asked me, she said, who's coming on Thursday? I said, kid named Keith Carney. And she said to me, do me a favor. When he comes on, don't say his name like that. I said, what do you mean? You said Carney. You said your I said, okay, so yeah. Keith Carney.
That's right.
She Rhode wanted Island. To say Rhode. Keith Carney.
Yeah, for Rhode Island. So I understand it better with no R.
Wieners and rings, right?
Yeah. That'll be a suspension. That'll be a fine. Nyland going ballistic. He's a freaking madman.
I'm Chris Nyland, and this is the Raw Knuckles Podcast. And Rhodey, like, funny, growing up playing, you know, hockey around New England, I met so many kids from Rhode Island, from the east side of Providence, Scotty Press, John Hearn, Jerry Dwyer, Glenn Lombardi, John McLaren, all these guys.
Yeah. A lot of hockey stars,
yeah. Yeah, I played prep school with a couple of them up in Lake Placid for a year. But Rhode Island, great hockey. Obviously, you're a product of Mount St. Charles, which, again, the championships in that state, one after another. Bill Belisle, the coach. You know, they were like the Montreal Canadiens when you talk about championships, right? Mount St. Charles.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every young kid was aspiring to go to Mount St. Charles, play for Bill Belisle. They were always winning, so everybody, all the kids wanted to go there. And I was fortunate enough to end up there and play with some great players. You know, after, you know, a small little Rhode Island, Mount St. Charles, you have a Brian Lawton, who got drafted first overall, and Brian Berard. Shortly after that, right?
So Matt Schneider, a bunch of guys, right? You had really great pedigree coming out of there, no question about it. And from there, you go on to the University of Maine. Now, listen.
Yeah, don't hold that against me.
No, not at all.
You're a Northeastern guy, right?
I'm a Huntington hound.
That's why you're on here. We got a beef to pick here. Yeah.
But University of Maine, Sean Walsh, obviously coming over it was an assistant coach at Michigan State. And then he comes over to a program that was really struggling program. And he really, he put his thumbprint on that in a big way. And how was that whole University of Maine, experience there with Sean and just everything?
Yeah, that was great. Obviously great for my development. He, like you said, he took that program on. I think they were just transitioning to Division One from the two, and somehow he was able to convince some players to come up there, and they started building it and started winning some games, and they went to their first Final Four the year before I committed. So I'm like, oh, this is an up and coming program, and maybe. And then there was a couple of Mount St. Charles kids that went up there. I don't know if you know David Capuano.
Yeah.
Jack Capuano, his brother, right? Right. So those guys were there, Rhode Island guys that went there. So that kind of.
We had Monty on. We had Jim. Was he that good in college, Jim Montgomery?
Monty, yeah, he was unbelievable. Yeah. Well, he's pretty good playing with Paul Kariya too, right?
Yeah, incredible.
Those guys dominated.
Jeez. Right. And geez, when they won the championship that year, right? What did he score? Yes. A natural hat trick in game seven? Not game seven. In overtime.
No, that was in the overtime, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the third period or something. They were down. They won in overtime, I think, a game before, and then he scored three. Natural hat trick. They won 5-4 or something. But incredible. Incredible stuff. So you're in Maine. Did you have aspirations of playing the NHL, or were you like, I'm going to college, I'll get what'd you major in there?
Well, I don't
you don't remember
hockey, I think. No, I was a physical education major, health, whatever they called it back then, health science, education major. But I just got drafted that summer before I went to school. So I thought that was a possibility. I obviously had to get better, and Maine was a perfect place to go and develop and play with some good players. But yeah, I was drafted 1988, Buffalo Sabres in the fourth round. And then that was my freshman year, 88, 89 at Maine.
Exactly.
You were like an offensive defenseman in college?
I was. I thought I was a Bruins fan, so sorry. I remember watching Bruins games over the years, and I was a defenseman, so Ray Bourque was my guy. I just try to emulate him, and I thought I was him at Maine. I wore number 7, and once I got to the NHL, I knew, okay, I'm not going to be the number one power play guy. I'm not going to be that offensive guy, so I had to kind of change my game a little bit, learn how to play defense, get more physical. So,
You certainly, you figured some things out, and, you know, 1,018 games in the National Hockey League, quite an accomplishment, certainly, for any player, but a defenseman, American-born defenseman, it's quite an honor. And, you know, I watched an interview with you when you got your 1,000th game. It was afterwards. And they asked you, how'd you do it? You said, listen, you come into the league just trying to make your way, and then you try and figure out how to play and what you have to do at this level.
Yeah.
Now, figuring that out, I looked at your years in Buffalo. It seemed, you know, you were up and down those first few years. Did you have a mentor or anybody there in Buffalo that kind of helped you come along, or was that not till you got to Chicago?
It was more when I got to Chicago. I mean, we had some good players in Buffalo and guys I learned from, but you're right about, I mean, I think when you first come in the league, you're just trying to survive, right? You're just trying to stay and stay as long as you can. And so when I was in Buffalo, it was, like you say, it was up and down between the minors, Rochester and Buffalo, and played some games. And then it was really when I got traded to Chicago, I figured out, okay, well, I need to change. I need to learn, you know, how to defend better. And Chicago was a perfect place with Chris Chelios, Steve Smith, Gary Suter. We had pretty deep core there, and guys you could really learn from. And so that's kind of helped me.
Kind of where it started.
Develop a little quicker.
You had to learn how to have a good time off the ice. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's important, right? You want to celebrate some stuff off the ice, but you got to show up the next day and be ready to go. So
those years in Chicago were good to you. You find your way. You know, some consistency there. And look at the number of games you played. I mean, you stayed healthy. You were there. You met your wife there, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And you met, did you meet her through Jeremy Roenick, was it somehow?
Yeah.
Is that the story?
That's pretty good, yeah. Chelly and JR ran a charity golf tournament, right? They did that for years, Chelly's kids, and they, you know, donate money. But anyways, that was every year before the season would start. We'd some guys would go in early and participate in that. But it was at one of the events. It was at an event that was hosted by some of the big sponsors, right? And they hired some local models from an agency, and my wife happened to be working in Chicago then, and we met at this night before party dinner. And before the golf tournament, and it's.
I love. Look at the big smile, Tim. Look at the big smile. He's happy. All these years later.
I was like, this is
She brings a smile to his face.
25 years, man. That's a.
Well, God bless you. That's awesome. And your time in Chicago, and you played 6 different teams: Phoenix, the Ducks, Vancouver, Minnesota, Buffalo. You had quite a few coaches. Who was your first coach in Buffalo?
John Muckler.
Oh, Jesus. John Muckler. That explains everything. I don't have to. Thank you. God rest your soul, John. But anyway, that explains those first. Yeah.
John was trying to rebuild the Edmonton Oilers, right?
Yeah.
Over there, and I think that they were trying to make me an offensive defenseman, and I think it. I mean, it, I don't know if it was. They probably thought they had a more skilled guy coming in. I don't know, but then I had to. Yeah, I was there for a little bit, and then when I got traded to Chicago is when I.
And who was the coach there in Chicago?
Daryl Sutter.
Okay, Sutsy. I Darryl, love him. I love him.
Yeah. And you had Craig Hartsburg too, great. Right?
Yes. Craig? Yep. Okay. After Daryl left, and then Hartsburg came in. So I had those two guys there.
Where'd you live in Chicago? I'm from Chicago. Where'd you live there?
I lived downtown. Okay. Lived downtown. Just rented an apartment downtown. Yeah. And then my wife and I, when we got married. Because I got married here in Chicago, we moved up towards Lincoln Park, that area.
Yeah.
So
downtown.
Just like you know the stories, right? Then a month later, I was traded to Phoenix.
Yeah.
After. So
you can't
plan.
So you know, Muckler wanted that offensive guy, or he thought you were going to be that offensive guy. When did you, which coach and who was it that defined your role? Because you were a really steady, stay-at-home D. You could, you know, shut down lines, PK, all that. Who defined that role for you, or did it just come naturally? I don't know.
I think it was kind of a mutual thing. I think it was a little bit, I figured out that was a better role for me. And then watching like guys like Chelios, these guys, I played with Chris and like he was all over the ice, right? He was up the ice. He was battling in front of the net. I mean, he was all over.
He was all over everywhere.
I just had to stay in front of the net, cross check guys, get the puck, get it out, right? So I think playing with him and then Craig Hartsburg kind of, you know, helped me figure out, you know, that's the style of play and what they're looking for type of thing and how I can have longevity. So that was cool.
How was the night? And I believe Roenick saved your life one night when you were playing the St. Louis Blues and I saw Chris Pronger had you down on the ice,
man.
And Roenick came in out of, like, I honestly, JR, the passion, the way he played the game, crazy,
yeah.
But when I saw him come in and
teammate.
Just he blindsided Pronger and got him off your die. I mean, you must have been like, yes, you know. I saw you pop up out of that one.
Well, that all started by I flipped the puck out. I hit him in the face with a puck. So he just was like, he grabbed me right
and Pronger. And,
yeah. But a lot of my early fights, I was like, I hit, you know, I cross-checked a guy and it went right off his shoulder pad up to it, right between the eyes. And it's like, okay, I'm fighting now, right?
How was that? By accident. How was that? Because, again, you don't fight in college. I didn't fight in college. How was that, like, adjusting to that part of the game? And not that you fought a lot, Keith, but, you know, when you were in that first fight, what was it like?
It's an adjustment because I think you're attracted to the game because of all the physicality and stuff. I enjoyed that part of the game. But like you say, you don't get to do that until you get to professional level. Right. So when I got there and then my first year was 1991-92 season. And that was still back in it. Like if two guys are fighting, everybody's kind of grabbing somebody. Right. So you kind of, you're not sure who, if you grab the wrong guy, right?
Let me grab Tim.
Oh, yeah. I'm asking like where I should go to dinner, you know, later. Where should I go to dinner? I'm like, buddy.
So,
who was your first fight? Do you remember?
My first fight was Mario Roberge. Did you play with him?
No. Well, yeah, they 91, 92 when I came back to Montreal, but that was my last year. And he was there, Mario, crazy Mario.
Yeah, he was, and I cross-checked. I stepped up on a neutral zone, kind of cross-checked him in the shoulder pad, and went right up and hit him right in the forehead between the eyes. And he was just like, he hit me about three or four times. But the best story is John Muckler on the bench. He's like, give it to him, Art. Give it, refs. Get in, refs. Get in.
So did they call you Art? Is that your nickname?
Yeah,
Art, exactly. Connie?
Yeah.
Art Connie, that's funny.
Yeah.
The hockey nicknames are the best. Are you ready to take your love for hockey to the next level? Join the Fight Club Raw Knuckles exclusive Patreon to unlock amazing perks like ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and even a chance to win a game day experience with me in the Habs Cave. Don't miss out on this ultimate hockey experience. So, you Phoenix, your time there. You played with JR there, didn't you?
Yeah. We had a good team there. A lot of Americans, like Tkachuk was there. Yeah. Mike Sullivan. Who else was there? But JR was there. Rick Tockett. We had some good players.
Claude Lemieux, they had Pepe.
Yeah, that was towards the end of my career there.
Yeah.
But,
were you there when JR got his face rearranged?
Yeah.
Wow, huh? I just did a alumni event out in Newfoundland with a couple of former NHL players, quite a few guys. And Darian Hatcher was one of them. And I'm going to tell you, like, I never played against Hatch, okay? I retired in 92, thank God. The size of that guy, I was like,
"Oh, he's huge!
Are you kidding me?" And when I watched that hit and the force he came through it, and then J.I. even playing after that, like he had to be nuts, right?
Yeah, we couldn't believe he came back, you know, in that series.
I was like
Hatcher knew exactly what he was doing, what he was trying to do there, right? Put him in the hospital. Yeah.
Payback's a bitch, right?
Yeah.
So, now, when did you and Amy start to have children? Was it in Phoenix or?
We had triplets. They were born here in Phoenix.
That's what I was going to ask. In Phoenix, had triplets. Yeah. How about you? How difficult that must have been playing hockey and leaving home and poor Amy with triplets.
Yeah.
Did she have help?
We had a lot of help. Yeah. Her mom, her aunt came in. And then once we were kind of settled, cause I got traded to Anaheim right after that. And so once we kind of got settled, then we had to hire nannies and just people to help out. Yeah. But I mean, I had the easy part. I can go off and practice, go travel and play. And, she was
within 6 months, did you have like a favorite? There had to be one that was like worse than the other out of the trip.
You're right though, because a couple of them were finicky. One literally, he'd fall asleep waiting to eat. Like if we couldn't give him a bottle, if I was alone or my wife was alone, and we would just put him off. That's Cade. Put him off, sit him on the side, and he would literally fall asleep instead of, most kids are crying, they want to eat, right? he's really easy when he was tiny like that. That's changed over the years, but.
So those three boys, triplets, when did you find out, did you know right, obviously Amy must have went for a checkup. You found out right away?
We found out. So we were in Arizona here. We went to a fertility specialist because we were ready to have kids. Things weren't working out. So when we did some stuff and we found out early on that we were going to have three. There's like multiple. Well, we went for an ultrasound. They're like, "How do you feel about multiples?" And I'm like, "Okay, he didn't say twins. Wouldn't you say twins?"
Multiple.
So like, "Holy shit, what's that mean?" You got three babies. I said, "Okay, well."
God, what a moment.
Did you know then you were going to like settle down in Phoenix? Did you guys like want to settle down in Phoenix like then? Like, because that's where you live now, right?
No, because that was 2001. I figured I could play play a little bit longer. I was.
But when you were done, were you like, we're going to live in Phoenix? Because you live in Phoenix now, don't you?
Yeah. So we moved. We still had our home here, which worked out because my last team was Minnesota. 2 years. And so it was obviously cold up there. We're like, okay, we still have our house in Arizona. Let's put, because I wasn't sure if I was going to play or what. So we said, let's move back to Arizona, put the kids in school. And they were like first grade then. I think it was first or second grade. So it was early on. So, and then we've been here ever since. It's been easy to raise them there. And
yeah. Well, I want to get into that a little bit more in a bit. But so you leave from Phoenix and you go to Anaheim. Babcock, yeah. Was he there the whole time you were there?
He was there. Brian Murray was my first coach there. Actually.
Okay. Murray.
Yeah, they hired him to coach. And then the year after, he took over as the GM.
And he brought Babcock in.
And he brought in Babcock, yeah. So I was there during that time, yeah.
And so, listen, there's a coach who knew what he had in you, I guess. They talked about you in the playoffs. He said it's poise. Connie is our glue. When he plays with poise, it settles everyone down and we make good decisions. Man, that's pretty cool coming from that guy, knowing what we know now. But how was he as a coach for you?
He was a great communicator. He was X's and O's. He was excellent with all that and motivating guys. He got a lot out of the young guys that year, which really helped us. That year we went to the finals.
Yeah.
Nobody expected us to go. We got some good play out of some of our younger players, which was good. But we had a pretty strong team. But we finished, I think, seventh that year in the playoffs, in the regular season, and had to start out with Detroit in the first round. And then but we started out, we swept them and got on a roll.
Yeah.
He was a young coach then, right?
He was coaching Cincinnati and Anaheim's minor league team the year before. And then,
that's where he met Mike Commodore, by the way.
Yeah, we just said
Cincinnati.
He said he said the complete opposite of what you just said. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. He and Tommy didn't click so well.
And believe me, we're not trying to get dirt on Babcock, but so your time in Anaheim, then a little bit in Vancouver, you go to Minnesota. Was Jacques there?
Jacques was there. Yeah. Yeah, and I said if I had played for Jock early in my career, I could still be playing maybe.
Right?
Everyone has said he's the best coach. Didn't you say the same thing?
Well, the way he structures his practices are like all game situations. Like it's really unbelievable. Yeah, that was the best practice to get you prepared for the games. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Jock on, Tim and I, and he never does these things, right? And I absolutely love Jacques, but he was on here. We had to kick him off. He was like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah. Really?
Honest to God, I had to stop it. I'm like, we would have been going all afternoon. He was so good. I just absolutely love that guy. And you're right about those game situations. Here's what he told me once, Keith. And he said to me, do you think how you think you play last night? I said, well, all right, I thought it was pretty good. Come on, he said, be honest with yourself. And I'm like, well, what do you want me to say? I sucked. He said, yeah, because you suck. You know, you have to be honest with yourself. He said, and this is the hardest thing for a player. And I remember, I'll never forget. Then he said to me, he said, you know why I do all these drill? You got the puck all the time on your stick in practice and. Because when you're in a game and it gets on your stick, I want you to do something good with it. That's why we do this every day.
Yeah.
And he would explain, the first coach I ever had that did that, and he's the first coach who ever grabbed me and said, you fight too much. Like, slow down.
Really? You know what?
Yeah. I don't want you fighting all the time. And that guy was, he was just on a whole other level. And
he was just so smart, knows the game so well, and just... Yeah.
And of course you had Crazy really Mario. Crazy Mario as an assistant.
Mario was coaching the D. Yeah.
Oh, that is so funny.
And then Mike Ramsey was our third assistant.
No, I had Rammer. He was my head coach in Atlanta for.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I played with him in Buffalo. He was one guy.
We might be
thinking
of two different. We might be thinking of. Isn't there two of them?
Yeah, there's two different
Ramsey.
Ones.
Craig Ramsey. Sorry.
There's Craig and Mike.
Craig doesn't listen to this. He'd probably get mad at me for that. But Craig Ramsey was there.
Craig Ramsey. Oh,
he was
Craig
the
Ramsey,
coach I had.
He's a good coach, Craig Ramsey, too. Yeah. I didn't have him, but I heard really good things.
Get into the action with Fight Club, Raw Knuckles' new exclusive Patreon. From ad-free episodes to uncensored content and discounts on merch, there's something for every hockey fan. Join the Fight Club today.
So now the transition, like I struggled getting out of hockey. You know, we see it in athletes, you know, all around the world. When they finish the game, it can be difficult for some. Some make a seamless transition. How was that transition for you? And what do you think was, how was the transition for
you? It's like you say, for everybody that plays professional sports, you experience it, right? And, you know, for me, I was excited to be home around my kids, my family, be a regular dad again, right?
Yeah.
We get to experience it in the off season, right? We're always with our families. We're doing stuff with the kids. And then when you play, you know, you're busy for the hockey season. But I think when I get finished, I just kind of jumped into being dad, helping out around the house. And so that was great for the first couple of years. Was enjoying that, and then it's like, okay, now what's next? What do you do? All I've done is play hockey.
Yeah.
So that's tricky.
So you have the three boys and a daughter, and then you adopted one.
About 7 years ago. About 7 years ago now, almost 8 years, we adopted our first son. He's 17 now. And then just 2.5 years ago, basically 3 years ago, we adopted another boy. So we have two boys, 17 and 12.
Okay. Yeah.
So that keeps me busy.
Well, but, I say God bless you and your wife, Amy. I think that is so awesome. Like here you are. Three healthy children, the triplets, and then your daughter, and you adopt these other two kids that obviously needed a family. And I just find that, it's awesome. Yeah. You know, it's
thank
just so
you.
Cool
thank
that you.
You
guys have given two children a chance at life and a good chance at life. So that's awesome. God bless you.
Yeah.
Both.
So thank you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's been nice. It's been a challenge, but it's been good because like we want to give back. We want to take care of kids if we can.
Yeah,
we've been in a position where we're pretty stable here. So that's been good.
I guess I got to stop bitching about my whole situation.
Right, Tim?
No, but that, yeah, I know. But, it is unbelievable though. Good.
But I was after a few years sitting at home, I'm like, what do I do? So, and I know hockey, so I'm going to jump back in hockey. So I started working for the Blackhawks, just doing some player development stuff, some scouting, and I did that. And they were good. They just came off their first cup that they had won there, and so things were rolling in Chicago. So it was a good time to be around it. So I did that for several years, three or four years. So I enjoyed it, but
in that
again,
time in Chicago,
travel.
You won a cup, right?
Yeah.
So you got to win that Stanley Cup. You didn't as a player. How fulfilling was that for you, though? Really? Because listen, I went to the Stanley Cup final once, and we won in '86.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I always say this: I am so grateful I got that opportunity. I couldn't imagine going there and losing. And never getting back there and be like, how was that for you losing that game 7 and then
here you are
in management?
Like you said, I played all those years and never got a sniff, right? And it was the first time we got to the Stanley Cup Finals. And it's tough because you know it's probably not going to happen again, most likely, right?
Yeah.
So it's like there's one opportunity and you make it to game 7. It's like, oh, man, that was tough to swallow. for sure.
See, it's funny. When we won in 86, I had that feeling, we're going to get back here. But I found out pretty quickly, you know, that's a dream, that's for sure. But, yeah. So winning that cup in Chicago in management.
Yeah.
Would you say as fulfilling? You were...
No. I mean, it's nice to have the hardware. I got a nice ring, but it's like...
Did you get a day with the cup?
It didn't work out for me. Something happened, but no, I never had a day with the cup. But everybody did. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody had it. So, but there was, I mean, it was nice. It was nice to be a part of something, a winning product, right? That's always great. But it doesn't feel the same when you're not sweating and fighting with the guys. It's just not the same, right?
I hear you. But, you know, even when we won it in 86, I tore ligaments in my ankle like the game four, and I wasn't on the ice for the last game. And I felt like an outsider, but I got my suit on holding the cup up instead of my, you know,
right.
And I remember being bummed out. I was like, yeah, but listen, to be a part of it and have that hardware, like you said, it's awesome.
Well, that's the thing. You know what it takes to get to that point, right? It takes everybody. It really does. Yeah. The whole organization, they're working to find players, and the guys are doing it on the ice, but it takes everyone in the organization.
Was that was the 2015? Was that in Boston?
That was my first – that was the year – it was the one in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I was the year they won in Boston, I was that's the year we did the motorhome trip. I did it one year too early.
Oh.
I had to resign for that season because we took off and we were gone. And sure enough, they won the cup again.
Calling all hockey lovers. Upgrade your podcast experience by becoming an enforcer. Gain access to the greatest hockey doc ever, The Last Gladiators. And don't settle for ordinary. Join the Fight Club over on Patreon today.
You know, recently we saw Chris Chelios get his number retired. And I know Chelios had mentioned to me that he invited me to come out. And I had something planned previously in Newfoundland that I had to do. And looking at that, you know, he had a few guys out on the ice and invited a few guys. And you were one of those guys. And I've never met you, but I can see why Chelly certainly had you out there. You're a good man. How honored were you to be asked to be out there with him?
Must have been cool. It was a huge honor. I thanked him, like, just to include me in his celebration. That's a huge day, and I mean, much deserved, right? He had an incredible career, Chicago kid, you know. So, but yeah, just to be included in that was, I will never forget it. I mean, I tell him, I mean, learning the game from him helped me stay in the league for sure. Because I was still trying to figure out, you know, what type of player I'm going to be, how I'm going to stay in this league. And, he was instrumental in that. Huge.
That's so cool. Yeah, you know, I remember, you know, he came here. I remember when he came from the Olympics. I met him.
Yeah, he was on that. He was on the 86 team with you, right?
Yeah.
And you guys won.
Yeah, but when he came in from the Olympics, I think it was 84, were they in Sarajevo, I think, maybe?
Oh, the Olympics.
He came from the U.S. team, and I met Chelly. It was, you know, it was still winter. He'd come walking around the corner at the Forum, and he had a little light jacket on. It was freezing out. jeans and a t-shirt and sneakers with no socks. And I'm like, here we are, Montreal. And Chelly just shows up as American as one could be, as college as one could be. And man, we hit it off. I loved him as a teammate. But there's a guy who, when he came in, you know, he learned from a guy like Larry Robinson. Larry was so, established at that point, and the career he had was incredible. And, He was so good with those younger guys, and Chelly grabbed that, and in turn, he passed that on too.
It's crazy too, because you played with them, and then you know, I don't. Maybe at the time you played with them, you know, were you thinking he's going to play another 10 years or whatever? Right? Like that's the crazy thing.
It's
like,
that was
because he was probably 40 or 39 when, and that's when you retired when you were 39. So you probably played with him when he was like 39, right?
He was a little bit younger than that, but I remember he was probably like 30. I was 25, 26. So he was 33 maybe.
Okay. But still like, yeah. And then he played
34, no. but they were, like you said, they were pushing him out. They're like, they thought he was done.
Yeah. Right. They ain't like, pushing me out.
and then you trade him to Detroit, which is, doesn't make sense to me.
And he goes 10 more years there. Like, it's like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
You know, and it's funny, we talked about this, but, you know, Babcock, the whole Babcock thing, right, with Johan Franzen and Commodore and all that. And then I see Chelly at the end, and he was, you know, he wasn't playing as much. And I used to look at him on the bench. Yeah. I could tell he was pissed, but he was always ready to go. And, you know, I was sitting there saying, Chelly, you know, what are you, 48, you know? It's time. Like, you know, I can see being mad at the coach when you're 25, but you're 48. Like, you're 48. He's like, he's so pissed that.
Yeah, you can't play 25 minutes anymore, Chelly. Just take your 10 minutes.
Yeah. And it was so funny because, I said this the other day too, I had a teammate, Bob Gainey, who told me, Chris, you know, if you are okay with diminished ice time, you can stretch your career out another year or two, you know, make a little extra money. And I'm there, okay, Bob, yeah, I get it. I couldn't sit in the bench. I just couldn't. You know, I had to play. And I see Chelly playing to that age. I'm like, oh, my God, it's incredible.
I know.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So now the boys and playing hockey, the kids play hockey. Who? What's the deal? One's in Maine, right?
One's at the University of Maine. Yeah, he's a sophomore this year, but he went as a walk on last year as a freshman and played 20 games, had a good season, and then this year he's been fighting a back injury, so he hasn't played at all.
Okay. So but, the three boys, did they all play hockey in Arizona growing up?
Yeah. They all started. Yep, they played hockey together. Then my one who's he stopped playing early on when he was 10 he stopped, but two played for a long time, and then my one at Maine is a big guy. He's 6'4", 210.
Wow.
And he's always been big. And his brothers are always been a lot shorter. They're
really
they're not. Yeah.
Okay.
But now like. My one son, he played hockey up until checking basically because he was small. He got run a couple times and said and he was a baseball player. So he plays college baseball. Plays at Division II school in Denver, Colorado Christianburg. So, but he's like 6'2" now. So they're all about 6'2", but the one that played hockey 6'4". Yeah, but they all played together for a while. It was fun. It was easy because they were all same team, right? Even though it was three of them, but. Just put them on together.
What position is the baseball guy, kid, player?
He's a middle infielder.
You know,
second base.
I looked on Facebook and I saw the picture of you guys back in 2020, Thanksgiving dinner with your family. And I just think it's so cool. You know, looking and having never met you, I knew of you. I watched you play. And, you know, knew you from Rhode Island and stuff, but never got the opportunity to meet you. And I'm glad I did here today. Thanks to Tim setting this up. But
yeah, we're champs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good. We're good teammates, Tim and I. Yeah, we dominated.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, one of the nicest guys that Tim and I have had on this podcast. You know, Tim?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I agree. Absolutely.
And we've had some real wing nuts too, haven't we, Tim? But yeah.
I'm fitting in.
Funny, Keith. We had Mike Keenan, right? And he coached Tim over in Russia, right?
Russia. Yeah.
I just met him for the first time at, he was at Chelly's thing.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was wondering.
Met him before.
So we have him on. And I had tried to go to Chicago near the end of my career. I was in New York, and I took a ride with Mike after practice one day. And I said, hey, get me out of New York, will you? I'll come here. I'll play for you. Blah, blah, blah. I'll see what I can do. Anyway, we had him on here, and I said to him, I said, Mike, you know, I've met you a few times now. And I said, you know, all the people I talk to around, everybody says you're such a prick, you know? I said, what is it with that? He said, well, he said, you know what? I'm a nice prick. Exactly what he said. I'm a nice prick. I'm a prick, but I'm a nice prick.
He is a great guy. I mean, he is a great guy. I mean, when you met him, Keith.
Is he? He was easy to talk to. Yeah, talking hockey, but he was easy to talk to. And I think he's, I mean, he was, he got some players to play pretty good. I mean,
he was a psycho.
Prick, no, but he got some, surprisingly, but he had success. But,
you know who he loved? He loved Noonan. He loved Noonan.
Oh, yeah.
He loved Noons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he had him in Chicago.
Everywhere,
and,
right?
Yeah.
Vancouver? Did he have him in Vancouver? Yeah.
But did Noonan love him is the question.
There was something going on there, for sure. He certainly liked Noons because he was everywhere with him. But
I heard Noonan stood up to him pretty good, though, like would call him out and, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, right? I'll see Noons once in a while. He's like, he tells me stories all the time about Keaton.
That's true. I heard one in Vancouver, like he would just say, tell Mike, shut up, or something like that. You know, just put him in his place, you know.
Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to the Raw Knuckles podcast. If you want the raw, uncut episodes, be sure to click the link below to join the Fight Club on Patreon.